No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote.
Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Good evening and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show. We're here interviewing the people that are making it happen, not always in front of the camera, but always ahead of the curve. We're not going to tell you how to feel or who to vote for. We're just putting the information out there because it's what happens in the shadows that really makes the world go round. So come listen, learn, and learn, because a vote is a terrible thing to waste. And now more than ever, we need everyone listening, learning, and engaged if we're going to make America sane again. If you got a question, call in at 888-627-6008. And tonight, we're very lucky to have with us Josh Leves. Josh was the number one fact checker at CNN. He's got an amazing podcast himself called They Stand Corrected. He's been a journalist and has really covered every aspect of journalism, I think, pretty much in the last 20 years. So we're excited to have him with us. He's going to tell us, he's going to straighten all this stuff out for us. He tells us both sides are giving us the wrong information. So let's hear what Josh has to say. Welcome to the show, Josh. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I like that you started with that song, too. I mean, just for the record, it makes no sense for there to be any Americans, taxpaying Americans, not represented in the Senate. I mean, I know you're a shadow senator, but the whole idea.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And it's funny, you know, everybody says it's crazy, too, you know, but the majority of people say it's crazy. But nobody really has a dog in the fight except us Washingtonians. So we don't get very far. And as you understand, as a journalist, it's a really a partisan matter, which it's all.
Well, except whichever political party thinks it would benefit them at any given time, you know.
Yes, and right. And that's what it always is. You know, it's always been that way. It's all when, it's always been a fight over what political party is going to control Congress. So it's still that way. And we'll see what happens. You know, it's been going on since 1801. So, we're certainly playing the long game. Go ahead.
That might actually be a really good place for me to start with you here, because if your listeners are wondering, I'm not right or left. I am over the entire concept of it. At this point, you know, there's the horseshoe theory, right? The further you go to the right or the further you go to the left, you end up in the same place. The horseshoe theory has become a full circle. The extremists on the far right and the far left are now best friends, and on each other's podcasts and YouTube streams and praising each other. You know what? So what I'm about is facts. And I know that a lot of people think they're about facts, but unfortunately, in my 20 years in big media, I saw how incredibly often we in big media fail to provide the truth. And when I say that these days, some people instantly get the Trump image in their mind, like fake news, but it goes way before that. It goes back way before that, you know. And so what I do on my show and my newsletter, They Stand Corrected, is I basically look at two ways in which this happens. One is what I call open mic nights, when places that are supposed to be bastions of truth just quote whatever a person says or invites them to say whatever they want to say without telling you what's true. And then the second is that the media itself pushes lies. And the media itself has been infiltrated by extremists who have their own agendas. So when I'm fact-checking things, it's usually really clear. It's like, here's what the media said, and here is concrete proof that it's false. And I take people through it step by step so they can come to see for themselves that we don't currently have big media as trustworthy sources of truth.
Well, and I got to tell you, I don't know how to combat this. Maybe you can tell us. But what I do generally is try to listen. I think the best thing I can do is I try to listen to CNN and also Fox to see what and try to figure out, try to glean what commonality I can find and thereby find the truth. I don't know if that's the
Well,
best way to proceed, but
I
go
think
ahead,
in
Liberty.
these trying times, one of the best ways to really get proper news is by watching British news.
British news. What do you think about the
International
Brit?
source.
Well, I'll tell you, like that would be great, and GBN does some really good stuff. Unfortunately, the BBC has had a bunch of disasters lately in which they got a lot of facts wrong to the point that they even acknowledged it and had to apologize for some of it. So the same kind of infiltration has taken place there. When it comes to openly partisan media, like CNN and MS Now, which used to be MSNBC, I always tell people there are big lies on the right and there are big lies on the left. If you watch Fox, you're unlikely to hear the big lies on the left. And if you watch MS Now, you're unlikely to hear the big lies on the right. But what we're supposed to have are mainstream outlets that are neither, that are just about the truth. Like where I used to be, CNN, NPR, these places are supposed to be saying, here's what the truth is and why you can trust us. And it keeps not happening. And in some ways, we can see that right now. Every day there's a new story in which there's just so much context missing. Like there was, this horrible shooting last night at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, which we can talk about this. It shouldn't exist anyway. But I still am not seeing in these reports this widespread surveys that have existed over the past year and 2 years now that show even more support for political violence on the left than the right. We're just not hearing that. So we hear so much about January 6th. We don't hear about all the grown support for violence from people on the left. So it shocks people when an anti-Trump person engages in some kind of violence, I guess. But we need to recognize this reality. These extremists are growing. And we need the media to be projecting that, to making it clear so that, I always say, if we don't have facts, we can't fix something. If I want somebody to fix my dishwasher, they have to first see what's broken. We need to recognize what's broken in America so that we can fix it together.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm one of those people that's startled by that statement because, it seems to me, now please explain that to me, because it seems to me that the narrative that the right puts out is really much more provocative and oriented towards violence than that the left's putting out. So please explain to me, how is the left just as extreme violently?
Yeah, I'll tell you a couple of the statistics. I always say in broadcasting, I tell listeners this, numbers can go in one ear and out the other. So you can find all these numbers at my Substack and in my show. They stand corrected, and you'll find it just theystandcorrected.substack.com. But here's a couple of them. One survey found that 40% of people on the left said that they would be willing to support violence to get Trump out of office, and around 25% on the right said they would be up for considering violence to crush anti-Trump protests. And meanwhile, there's a group called FIRE, Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression, and they said that. So they interview students every year, and they say that for as long as they have asked the question, they have found that people on the far left are more willing to support violence. So this is what we're seeing grow across our society now. January 6th was horrifying, and that was, and so was the, people might remember the Charlottesville riot, those Nazis, and that was a far right action. But we have also seen a string of terrorist attacks in the United States, Islamist terrorist attacks that are supported and fueled by people on the left. So until we stop to realize that the rhetoric, and not just rhetoric, but the straight up lies are fueling violence, and until we start to realize that what we have to do is educate people around facts, around truth, it's just going to get worse. And people are turning to social media now, you know, because they're not getting truth and everything they need from the media. So they're turning to social media, and social media is filled with conspiracy theories. And then some of the media themselves pick up on these conspiracy theories and just rush with them in this desperate search for clicks. You know, and if you look at what happened last night, what we really need are calm heads to explain that after any act of violence, if it's an assassination attempt, whatever it is, it always takes time to find out what the motivation was, what the security gaps were. This is what I wrote about today. How it happened, who this person is. We never know, almost never know, within the first hours or minutes. But it took no time for media and others to start rushing with any scraps of information they can get. And that just feeds these conspiracy theories. So we're already seeing it. People saying it was fake. People saying it was the deep state. People blaming the left. People blaming the right. We don't know. And if we had major sources of truth that we could come together around to help people understand, we don't have to have all the answers right away. Let's investigate. Let's find out. That would be a way of calming things, bring us together, and allowing us to move forward as one country instead of getting more and more bitter and angry and partisan.
Well, where do you find those unbiased keepers of the truth, intelligent of the truth? How do you find them? I mean, how do you separate bias? I'm a liberal. I really believe that everything I say is tainted to a certain extent by my liberal perspective on the world. So how do you filter that out? Or how do you get that truth teller that can come in and speak only about the truth and not about their bias? How do you find that person or people or institution?
You know, I totally understand that. So I'll give you some examples of the kinds of things that I do. Like, for example, the New York Times published this report claiming that a group knew how many civilians were killed in an attack in Gaza. All right, so this is something very substantive. It's a number. It's concrete. They said this group knows for a fact that the following number of civilians were killed. Well, unlike the New York Times, I contacted that group. And the group told me, no, we don't. They were just going with what Hamas, this terrorist group that runs that region, claimed. And I told the New York Times that, and they said, okay, but we're not going to change it. You know, this is the kind of thing I'm talking about, that there are just literally statements that are not corrected. Or just the other day, Kash Patel, he said this thing that made no sense. He said he has worked twice as many days as all other previous FBI directors, but he hasn't been there that long. And there are FBI directors who have worked there for decades. Like Hoover worked, I mean, nothing he said made sense. And so people send me his quote, and I was like, that's physically impossible. So I've been looking into hard, concrete facts. What does he actually mean? These are the kinds of things that the media should be doing in the first place. So left and right become totally irrelevant when there's something you can actually check. And when it comes to the support for violence that I was just talking about, these are analyses. This one is where it gets a little bit tricky. So part of what I did at CNN was I looked into studies and surveys, and people are rightfully wary when they hear about polls and stuff. I dig into them. I look at methodology. I look at what questions were asked. How many people were interviewed? You know, like if you ask 10 people something, and 9 of them say that they agree on something, that just means 9 out of 10 people think something. That doesn't mean 90% of Americans believe something. But then there are these surveys that are done that are really extensive. Some of them take place multiple times a year, interview tens of thousands of people, use scientific methodologies, make sure to match the population. You know, they take all these steps. And when we see those over time, and we see actual behaviors in real life change along with them, we can say, okay, here's a place that knows how to gather data. So when I tell you about support for violence, these are groups that have been tracking it for years, that have been asking the same questions and working with scientific methodologies. Anyway, I put those out there so that people can see them. And just so you know, I'm always inviting listeners and readers to get in touch. Tell me if I got something wrong. You know, I would love to do segments called I Stand Corrected, where people tell me you got something wrong, because there's nothing shameful about getting something wrong if you make a good faith effort in the first place. And that's where the media fails. In the rush to get people to click, the media is constantly running with whatever they just heard instead of stopping to find out what the truth is.
Okay, have my brilliant co-host straighten him out there, Liberty. Tell him tell him where he needs to be corrected. Go ahead.
So, I really agree with you. I like to refer to it as clickbait politics. And I think social media is a really big part of that. You know, as a young person, it's really interesting to see how this progressed in the ways they taught me to check for fake news. When I was maybe in like seventh grade, middle school, they used to tell me, okay, so to find fake news, make sure that you have a reliable source that has .org. And that was very simple back 10 years ago. Now they're teaching me about Citizens United court case, which was where... I'm sure you've heard about that, but it's the Supreme Court decided that money and technically power can infiltrate the media. And so my question to you, this is so interesting to me because I'm also a believer that both sides of extremism are actually very similar. They're just ideologically fed anger.
Exactly.
And so
exactly right.
If these facts are increasingly more accessible and more easily, let's say, distributed, do you think that the real power behind journalism is now just basically creating this context? And most importantly, where do you think, being back there in the back rooms of all of these processes, where do you think that mainstream outlets are structurally failing in this role?
Oh, such great questions. First of all, you're 100% right. The far right and the far left are now the same. And they just get there through opposing ideologies and end up at the same place. Yep. There are groups that are very clever about this. Let me tell you something. I did an episode about something called memetic warfare. And the idea is, in our society, we see memes. And to us, most memes are funny. They're like these silly images or whatever. But the studies of memes go back decades. And I interviewed this expert about it. He explained that people who want to manipulate thought processes, people who want to change cultures, people who want to help shape minds of young people in your generation, they learned long ago that one thing you do is memetic warfare. So you use images and very brief messages to push your ideology. You find ways to associate certain images with certain ideas, and that impacts people's subconscious minds. It gets them to instinctively believe certain things. And there are groups, some of them are foreign. I mean, Iran is famously engaged in memetic warfare. It's doing these images with Legos and stuff. It hired memetic warfare teams. But there are also extremist groups in America. On the show, I shared some studies from like U.S. military colleges and others that have been tracing this for decades. So the dream of manipulators is to get memetic warfare content, get memes, get images and ideas directly to as many people as possible, especially young people. And guess what? They are living in a time now in which they could not have dreamed of something this convenient, because they can literally send content into people's pockets, starting when they get their first phones, which at this age is what, like for a lot of kids, 12, 13, 14, cell phone penetration in America is at like 96%, and a lot of teens get them. So social media content is filled with memetic warfare, in addition to individuals like you and me and whoever else doing our best. The role of the media should be to ignore all that noise and provide the truth. But instead, it did the opposite. And I saw this inside CNN. There was this recent study that looked at millions of headlines, and it found that over time, headlines have turned to greater and greater anger, more and more rage bait, regardless of journalistic quality. So true or not, accurate representation of what's going on or not, these headlines have become angrier and angrier. And I know why, because I was there on the inside. Clickbait. So instead of standing against that phenomenon, big media have joined it. They are so desperate to get clicks that, I mean, I remember sitting there at CNN and we would change the headline until we saw the click rates go up. And that leads you to give up on quality. And as a result, what ends up happening is more and more people tune out. So news audiences are flocking away. The number of people who follow the news closely has gone down from just over half back in 2015, 2016, to less than a third now. People are not following the news as closely. And instead, here's what they get: headlines, just headlines. Because people screenshot headlines or send around articles and in social media and on our phones, people only look at the headlines. And so I always say mainstream media, big media is super, super powerful these days. But the reason is that social media people grab those headlines and share them. So that is the field we've entered into. And that's how we've ended up at this time in which people don't have trustworthy sources of truth that will always put truth first. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, but how about the individual? I mean, he's certain the individual, as you just pointed out, is not benign here. You know, my opinion is that people don't seek the truth. My opinion is that people seek things that reinforce their existing prejudices, right? So I don't want that, and that's why those little headlines work, right? I don't like people of color, so I see somebody call the people that are coming from Latin America into America, they're calling them rapists and murderers, and I'm like, oh, to begin with. I mean, isn't that a major factor? I used to say my Italian grandmother, who believed every stereotype, would not know if a person of color gave her a kidney, but she would remember every person of color she ever saw cash a welfare check in a liquor store. You know, I mean, those things resonated, right? And the other things she just didn't pay attention to. So what do we do about that? What do we, especially with social media, where you can pick the rabbit hole you want to go down, right? And so no matter what crazy ass idea you come up with, there are other people out there that will support you in it. So, you know, what do we do about that? How do we get people to listen to the truth?
Yeah, there's a short-term answer and a long-term answer. The short-term, the best I can offer is to be skeptical of everything you hear, and feel free to come to me. Like I mean, I'm just one person, I know, but the reason I created They Stand Corrected is that literally nobody else was fact-checking the news. You know, I used to be on air on CNN fact-checking politicians and pundits. Now I'm fact-checking the news. So when you see something, you can reach out to me. And I tell people this all the time. I explain in every episode how you can reach me. So short term, question everything. Don't trust it just because it comes from a famous news source. You know, it's good to look around and see whether it's true or not. But unfortunately, there's so much false content out there, it can be hard to get through to the truth. So feel free to come to me with that, and do be skeptical, and do be aware that groups on the left and right want you to hate, and they want to use your hatred for fueling their own movement. So there's that. But there's also a long-term solution that I think is really important that speaks to our mentality in the next generation. I have kids, and I've seen how this works. I believe that we make a big mistake out of the best intentions in our culture, in the way that we raise the next generations. We keep teaching kids that the most important sign of intelligence is how they argue for a position, you know, like debate teams, or like I've seen it with my even little kids, like, should lunch be 5 minutes longer? Argue yes or no. And then they judge you on how well you argue. And we keep praising that. But what I want is for us to stop that. I want us to instead say, okay, should lunch be 5 minutes longer? Well, how can we find out? Let's look into schools around the country that have lunch 5 minutes longer. What happens there? Are test scores any different? Are kids any happier? What happens when someone makes it 5 minutes longer? Does everything stay the same? Always look for facts. Just put curiosity ahead of a desire to express your own opinion. And instead, we pressure people to have an opinion. Like, someone, it happens to me all the time. People say, no, what's your opinion of blah, blah, blah? And I say, My opinion has nothing to do with anyone else's life. I don't even think about my own opinions on those things until it's time to vote. It's like, what I want to do is learn more. So what facts can I explore? What questions can I explore in order to learn more about this? And that curiosity, unfortunately, it just seems to be limited to like science and science class. Like, let's test and do a hypothesis and blah, blah, blah. And it sounds boring. But if we face all of life that way, everything we ever hear, I heard that this thing happened. Okay, what can I do to find out whether it happened? Can I talk to someone who was there? Can I find authentic video that was not run through AI? Can I see whether these things have happened before? Can I find someone to reach out to? Like that kind of instinctive curiosity, instead of trying to form an opinion, I think that will be a sea change in how we develop our entire society. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. But again, my agenda, because unlike
Yeah.
Liberty Jones, I was not a great lifelong long learner. I was a kid that wanted to get the hell out of school. I would have gone for
No, me
the
too.
5 minute longer lunch just because it meant 5 minutes less of academic endeavor. You know, I wouldn't have had to go any further than that. We got five more minutes of eating rather than 5 more minutes of English. Yes. So I don't know how you get rid of that and how you get people to listen to people like you, to want to search out people like you. That's a conundrum for me. But go ahead, Liberty. You're the younger generation. What do
This
you
is
think?
so interesting. Truly, I think you're talking a lot about the dissolution of the ego and what that means with social media. So, if curiosity is the foundation of better thinking, what's a cultural habit that us adults do that we need to unlearn in order to prioritize curiosity? And, what do we need to change first? Is it education? Is it media incentives? How do we even change that? Cultural norms? Should we start mass creating memetic warfare about curiosity? Like, how do we go about this
Yes.
cultural shift?
Yes. We should be. By the way, you really are you? How old are you?
I'm 22.
Wow. I am so impressed right now because you, and I'm always wary of saying that because like, I don't want to sound condescending. Like, you're so young. It's not that. It's that you've grown up surrounded by so much of this stuff, but you definitely have, a lot of wisdom and open-mindedness and are not, you're clearly not caught up in either of the extremes, which is amazing.
Thank
The answer is
you.
yes. So yeah, no, it's a beautiful thing. So I spoke with this expert on memetic warfare. His name is Jason Corman. He runs this company called Gaping Void. He says we fight fire with fire, but we use these same tools in a good way. So for example, he wants active memetic work, memetic campaigning, you can even think of it as warfare, I guess, that instills a national identity for what it is for all of us to be American. Like what that even means anymore. You know, we have these very popular people in podcasting and online who are openly Americans, who are openly anti-America, like they say so, right? And he says if we had a joint national identity, if we had memetics showing great things about America, then that could help build a national identity and that could help us want to work together more. And yes, the same thing goes for pushing curiosity, pushing facts. You know, I, in my own tiny little way, make social media content and try to put that out there. Just a few facts here and there to change the mindsets and get people interested. Now, I will tell you that part of the problem is that we are at a disadvantage being a democracy. All right, so democracy is the best form of government. It is, the one in which people end up being free, the most free we can be. However, in a democracy, we are always focused on the next election, and they happen every 2 years. And what that means is both parties are always trying to make us feel that things are awful because we need to switch parties to make things be good. So we, inside a democracy, are always getting negative memetic content from our own leaders. I mean, if you think about what Trump's campaign were all about for all three of his presidential races, it was all about American carnage and craziness, like immigrants are eating your pets or whatever far right craziness. You need me to come along and clean it up, or your whole society is going to be on fire. And we're getting the same thing on the left. People like try to call Trump a Hitler or a Nazi or whatever. He's not a Nazi. Like, the Nazis were Nazis. Non-Nazis are not Nazi. And so what's happening is both sides internally are pushing all this hatred. So it's an uphill battle to stand against that. But what would have to happen would be positive responses to positive messaging. We had some of that back in 2008 when Obama ran an overall very positive campaign. And there are studies that show that anger over the years has gone from being one force in politics to the dominant force in politics. So we would all need to come together around a coalition politically that presents a vision of a better America without pushing hatred. And some of that can be done grassroots by, quote unquote, progressive and quote unquote conservative groups working together. And I say this all the time, by the way. I say, let's progress in all the ways we need to, conserve everything that's working well, and move forward based on truth and justice. Like, we can do this. We can, at a grassroots level, build coalitions around a larger purpose. That's what just happened in Hungary. That's how they got rid of the guy Viktor Orban. You might have heard about in the news. A lot of Democrats here were celebrating when Viktor Orban lost in Hungary, but they were getting the wrong message. They were saying, "Aha, a far right guy lost." No. What happened in Hungary was the left, the far left, dropped out and threw its weight behind a more centrist, palatable, still conservative leader. Here, I'm not saying it doesn't have to be conservative, liberal, but we, the people, can work to create a more centrist political coalition. And that could help push more positivity in America, less hatred, less violence, and in turn, more openness to learning about each other, which means more openness to the truth.
Well, let me ask you, let me look at the other side of the coin for a minute. What about repercussions? One of my favorite guests on this show has been Dan Rather. If some of our listeners don't know, Mr. Rather was one of the number one broadcasters in America who made a mistake by saying that George Bush, President Bush at the time, had never, or maybe he was Kennedy Bush, I can't remember. I think it was Kennedy Bush. Never served in the military, and he got that information from a reliable source. But unfortunately, he didn't check that source, and it wasn't true. George Bush actually has served in the National Guard, and he served honorably in the National Guard. So his career just went right. He's still got a career. I mean, he's got a podcast and everything, but it really took a nosedive, right? So why doesn't that happen to people that are putting out unverified facts these days? What's happened to the media
Because,
where they're not policing themselves?
well, first of all, you're absolutely right. Second of all, in a way, it did happen to the media in general because we no longer have standard bearers. Like, if you look farther back, I was actually looking at these statistics today because I'm working on my next episode. So back in the 1970s, about three quarters of Americans trusted the media. That is now down to an all-time low of 28%. And this is legit figures from Gallup. They ask the same questions every year, broad selection of Americans. So Dan Rather was at the midpoint in there. Dan Rather was in that post-Walter Cronkite era in which there was still this concept of standard bearer of news. So, like, there used to be three big TV networks. They had evening newscasts. Technically, those things still exist, but I never hear about them. I haven't watched one in decades. But the idea is that what's happened instead is everything has atomized. People have smaller audiences at more places getting different content because there are no trusted standard bearers of news anymore. You know, the New York Times has become super far left and gets so much wrong, and PR too, where I used to be. And as a result, the media has had to pay a price for it. But as for why they're not policing themselves, that boils down generally to money. Most of these places are corporate owned, and the big bosses are focused on the next day's stock returns. And if you can get some more clicks that one day, you get more advertisers. Now, in the long run, it's a terrible form of leadership, even business-wise, because they're giving up their own audiences. What's happened is people are announcing proudly that it's called JOMO, the joy of missing out. Larger numbers of people have announced that they are giving up on the news, and they're happier that way because the news is so negative. So what happens is, instead of trying to win back all the people who have left, who have flocked away from the news, these news agencies instead are competing for the smaller pie, right? A piece of that smaller pie by getting angrier and angrier and angrier content. And in the process of doing that, they're making the pie even smaller. So the media is paying a price for it because people are giving up. But there isn't one prominent individual who is being held responsible anymore because we don't all watch the same people anymore. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, I think, but is there a way we could go into this from another angle in that we can train people? You know, the biggest political motivator since the beginning of time, in my opinion, has been fear. So how do we take the fear out? You know, and that's why we do it, right? These people are going to take your job. These people are going to come in and rape and murder. These people are going to whatever, right? And it's not to make you aware, it's to make you fearful, right? So that you go for the for the other side. Don't know how to get that. You know, is there a way that, you know, you talk about the way we raise children, for example. Is there a way that we can put more trust out there so that people are not fearful? How do we do that?
Yes. So one of the things I talk about a lot on my show is victim narratives. And the reason is that victim narratives are super manipulative. And once you see this, you can't unsee it. The vast majority of news operates with victim narratives, okay? And so what victim narratives are also known as the drama triangle. There are three characters in most stories. And this will answer your question, trust me. Sometimes it sounds like I'm going in another direction, but then I swing back, you'll hear me. All right, so victim, villain, hero. Most stories, the way they are presented to you, have that. So this horrible stuff that was being said about immigrants, they're coming in to take all your jobs, they are raping your children, they're eating your pets. The kind of victim narratives that are popular on the far right make you the victim. You are the victim, all right? And the villains are whoever they want you to hate right then. So immigrants or whoever it is, you know, scapegoating someone so that you will blame them for all your problems. And then the hero is the right-wing political figure who promises to come in and do something about it. So there's that kind of victim narrative. But the victim narratives on the left are just as dangerous. They're just shaped differently. The victim narratives on the left go mostly like this. You are privileged. In order to be a good person, you must stand for victims. And I, the progressive activist, get to determine for you who the real victims are, and you must agree with me or you're a horrible person. So what you find in the media, as soon as you start to notice that there's almost always a triangle, victim, villain, hero, you start to see that stories are usually shaped that way. If you are being given information and as you read it, I mean, look, sometimes there's an obvious victim and villain, like a person kills someone, you know, a person commits a crime, like that's literal. But when it's more complicated, when it is about people with like different political solutions wanting to run for office, or when it's one side that is saying something true and another side that's saying something false, the media instead runs to effectively make you feel that there is a victim and a villain and the hero. And if you start to notice that, then you can realize you're being manipulated. And then you can start to think, wait a second, what am I not being told here? You know, what are the facts here? So, for example, one thing I reported on recently was the Global Terrorism Index. It's out this year. It showed that deaths from terror killings from Islamist terrorism nearly quadrupled last year and hit the highest rate in America since 2019. And they're shooting up, and that increasingly these attacks are being carried out by teenagers, and that now even kids as young as 8 are being radicalized, including through memetic warfare. All right, so this is just an example. So the Global Terrorism Index comes out every year. It shows this extreme and rising danger of Islamist terrorism. It talks about this thing called Islamo-leftism, where a lot of leftist groups are working with Islamist terrorist groups. Okay, no major mainstream outlet reported on that. None of them. They didn't. Because it doesn't fit their victim narrative. They don't want to acknowledge the growing terrorism and violence on the left because they want, in general, the victims to be people on the left, the villains to be people on the right. And that's what gets their radicalized audiences to click. So when you start to look for that in the news, it can help wake you up and realize, oh, I'm being manipulated here. Oh, there are things I'm not being told, which you can find out from my podcast. And this is a lot of what people say to me. They're like, I had no idea these things were even happening until you reported on it. But I always say, don't trust me. Like, here are the links. Check it out for yourself. Here's the original reports. It's all in the newsletter. But the idea is, if you start looking for victim narratives, am I being made to feel that there's a good guy and a bad guy here? Then you become a more aware, conscious news consumer, and you start to rethink some of your own prejudices and open your mind to new ways of seeing the phenomena that are going on in our society. I want to make sure I'm answering this for you. Is this
Well,
helpful?
I think that so far, and you've been an amazing guest. I think that you're right on about so many of these things. I might not express them in the same terms that you do, but I have much of these same feelings, especially when it comes to the Democratic Party. I've been a Democrat for 40 years, and I agree with you 100% that the left in the Democratic Party does the same thing that the right in the Republican Party does. They have the same kind of influence. They have the same they have similar agendas, maybe not in terms of what they want to accomplish, but certainly in terms of their methodology. I agree 100%. But I also understand that truth without context can be a very dangerous thing too. And I'll give you an example. I worked for a guy named Senator Claude Pepper, and Claude Pepper was a member of the House of Representatives, but we called him Senator because at one time he had been a United States Senator. His opposition found out that many of the people that voted for him were itinerant farm workers. So they put out information that he was a heterosexual. And he practiced celibacy before marriage. And they didn't know what celibacy meant, but it didn't sound good. It sounded like communism or, some other
Oh,
thing they didn't
God.
like, right? And he really got defeated on the basis of, the fact that these people were ignorant to the terms that they were using, and they cast them in such a way that they always sounded horrible, So what do you do
Oh,
about
yeah.
that? I mean, you can't just put raw fact out there, can you?
I'm so glad you said that because I haven't told you. So the one thing that people are always quoting back to me when I meet people who have heard this and corrected or who write me about it is this thing that I say that I just say it so often I forget that it's a thing that I say. Truth equals facts plus context. All right, so it's exactly what you were just saying. You don't actually have truth without context. Like imagine that I tell you, a black guy just walked up to a white guy and killed him, right? Like that reinforces a racist idea. And now here's the context, right? Imagine this context. The black man I referred to is a police officer. The white man was about to shoot a kid. and the black police officer saved that kid's life by shooting the white man. Okay, see what happens when you get context? So a fact without context is a form of lying. It can be a half-truth. It can be one-tenth of the truth. You just reminded me. I don't know if this story is apocryphal. I'll look it up when we're done. But when I was young, I heard that there was some woman who had run for office, and the opponent spread a rumor that she was a thespian in college, which is a way of saying actress. But people didn't know what they meant, and they assumed it meant lesbian, and they voted against her. So, yeah, I mean, you know, taking a single fact out of context is a form of lying. And that kind of thing happens all the time, too. People extract a few words from a quote. I even did an episode about how a lot of people think that that if you are charged with libel, that truth is an absolute defense against libel, that you can just say, no, it was true, and therefore you get off. It's actually not always the case. You can be charged successfully with libel for saying something that is technically true, a lawyer joined me for this, if what you are saying is strategically designed to mislead people, to think something false. So a fact without context is lying. And context is more facts that you need in order to legitimately understand the first fact. So you are 100% right. That manipulation of separating fact from, you know, truth is just a way of lying. If you're not getting facts plus context, you are not getting the truth.
Well, I was always taught to quit while you're ahead. So liberty, you go. I'm 100% right. I'm going to stand on that. Liberty, ask a brilliant question.
So I can't help but to think, do you think, you know, if truth depends on context, and context is shaped by these attention-driven systems, and now we're stuck in this environment where these victim manipulative narratives are completely outwinning any aspect of reliable source. So is there a level of human nature to this? Is there a level of this being innate? Or do you think that we're being trained by the media itself?
No, great question. It is in our nature. And one reason I know that is I look at the really big picture of history. You know, one thing I talk about on the show is anti-Semitism and the history of anti-Semitism. You know, I talk about how in every culture at some point people turn on scapegoats. People look for minorities to scapegoat. And I explained that as a Jewish person, I know that, you know, we don't proselytize. We don't try to get anyone to be like us. We don't go around and try to make people be like us. So we remain a minority, and humans scapegoat minorities. These things that people do in every culture over time always end up repeating. Lies catch on. I was looking at the other day, actually, for one of my episodes about how news was spread in the Roman Empire and how propagandists would hire these basically town criers to go travel through town, spread lies, and have the next people spread lies, and have the next people spread lies. And people are willing to believe it. And part of, you know, what I'm up against, what you and all three of us in this call are up against, is that we care deeply about truth and about doing the right thing. We are not facing the world like a selfish politician or another selfish person who thinks, okay, this is a human failing. How can I use it to get myself more power, more money, more whatever feels like the trappings at the moment, you know, quote unquote fame, whatever the desires are. A lot of people do look at the world and think, how can I use that? And then there are the rest of us who would never do that to people, who really want people to have the truth. And so I talk about, we need a truth counter movement in which we create an instinctive curiosity when we hear any claim of any kind from anyone. How can I fact check that? And that's why I talk about long-term and raising kids. And you know, when my kids tell me something they learned, I say, oh, that's so interesting. I wonder if that's true. How can we check? The human failing is always going to be there. There will always be, as long as us, we the Homo sapiens, are still around, there will always be people using that, manipulating it, fueling anger, fueling hatred. The classic image of the villagers with torches happens today when it happens online, and it happens in vicious, violent protests, and it happens when someone opens fire at the White House Correspondents Association dinner. It's people being worked into an irrational frenzy, ready to engage in group violence or individual violence because they are so deeply convinced that it will be the right thing, and that what they are fighting against is, somehow going to benefit from their horrible action. So yes, that weakness will always be there, but it takes more and more and more of us to weed it out and expose it and shame it. And that's why it's so frustrating to me to see the force in society that's supposed to do exactly that fail. Like the media, I say all the time, people should only be in journalism for the societal role. It's like becoming a teacher or a firefighter or a doctor. If all the American major hospitals were letting half the patients die instead of treating them, like literally not treating them, we would see how awful that is. If all the firehouses in America were only bothering to respond to half the calls and not bothering to respond to the other half. If teachers were only teaching half the material and ignoring all the rest, we would see these as national crises. Our big major media have the crucial societal role of providing the truth, and they are failing to that exact same extent. So we need a counter movement that will shame the media for fact failures and force pressure and push them to do the job, which is to provide the truth, which is facts plus context.
Well, given what you said during the broadcast, do you think the movement of people, especially young people, to become independents rather than become Democrats or Republicans are a reaction to exactly what you're saying? Is this is this people seeking a different way, you think? And we see independence becoming more popular and more popular and more important in the political system, right? The outlier, the unpredictable factor. So is that something we can use to get to the point that you want to get to?
Yeah, I mean, so that's a mix. So what's happening with people giving up on the two parties is in many ways a good thing. They're not getting their solutions from the party. It's also, unfortunately, some of those people doing that don't feel that the parties have been extreme enough. Like there are people who feel that Trump and Trumpism and the Trump era are not far enough to the right, and people who feel that Democrats have not gone far enough to the left, which you, as someone who served, recognize how crazy that is, given what's happened to the Democratic Party and how quickly they're moving far left. So some people who are moving toward, independent status are extremists, but some are not. Now, the benefit there is, this is my dream. Like, what if finally in America we could have an actual independent candidate? And I don't mean a maverick who thinks independently. I mean an actual person who is not beholden to either party, who can create a government that removes the power, that finally puts a halt on some of the power of the duopoly, some of the power of these two parties, that comes along and creates a real coalition that proves that people who consider themselves right or left or neither can actually work together based on facts, based on truth, to build. And if we see that somewhere, like even at the state level, or at a city level in a big major city, if we see someone create a coalition like that, that's truly outside of the two-party system, that would be a big opportunity to demonstrate to America that we can do this, that we can find common ground around real solutions and tone down the hatred and work together. So, yeah, a growing independent movement in America that's about working together as opposed to the extremes, that could be a beautiful step forward.
Well, there you go, Liberty. And that's that you're looking for a new career. That'd be great for you. I could
That
see you
would
doing
be.
that. But we're running out of time here. So is there something? I have so many more questions for you, Josh, and I hope you'll come back on again. But is there
But I
something
have a
that we
question.
didn't? Yeah, go ahead.
Can Liberty become the first ever senator from Washington, D.C. who gets a vote?
Yes!
I hope that's the plan.
That's
That's the
the
absolute
dream.
plan. And let me tell you, she's got everything she needs to do that. So yeah, that's what we're working for. I just hope I'm still around so she can give me a job,
Yes,
you
you
know.
both get jobs.
Okay.
Absolutely. Hey, I'll be your I'll handle your press. Thank
Tell
you.
our listener one more time what your podcast is, because I think it's
Yeah,
really
sure.
worthy.
Yeah, my name is Josh Levs, LEV like Victor, S like Sam. I'm the only Josh Levs in the world. And you'll find my website, joshlevs.com. My podcast is called They Stand Corrected. It's wherever you listen. So wherever you're listening to this right now, you can listen to it there. And the Substack is technically a Substack bestseller. It's theystandcorrected.substack.com, or just look me up. Just Google me, Josh Lebs, and you will find all those links. And I love hearing from people. So tell me that you heard me on this show and what you thought and what questions you want answered. Send me links that you want me to fact check. Inundate me with stuff. I love hearing from people.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. And I hope people do that. And I hope you come back again. And, you know, we always close out with a song that we dedicate to our guests. And this goes out to you, Josh. This is Don Henley with Dirty Laundry. See you next week.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.